Well, thank you, Dr. Kobayashi. I want to begin by acknowledging my co-authors. Dr. Kirk Pomper is here in the back of the room. He's our research director. And they're not listed in the program. They ought to be. John Cameron and Tony Silvernail, whose contributions to these studies really goes beyond simple acknowledgement. They ought to be authors here, too. And, of course, I want to thank Dr. Kobayashi for inviting me to present this afternoon. I'm going to talk about the research that we're doing on hemp, on organic land at Kentucky State University. Now, this is a new crop to us, but, of course, there's an ancient history here. We're looking at cannabis sativa. This is among the first crops that was cultivated in China. It's been cultivated since at least 4,000 B.C. It was a staple grain along with barley, rice, wheat, and soybean in China. It was the predominant crop used for textiles at the time, and you can find imprints of cannabis sativa textiles on pottery shards from the Yanshao culture. Ancient paper fragments are still being found that come from hemp, and there's been medicinal uses of this product since at least 2000 BC, and it's been used as an anesthetic since at least 200. Now, it also has a long history in Kentucky, where I happen to be working. It was first planted there in 1775 near Danville, just south of Frankfort, where Kentucky State University is. And Kentucky was, in fact, the principal producer of hemp fiber in the United States until the end of the Civil War. Hemp at the time was used for rope, it was used for bags, for baling twine, for naval rigging. And there was a particular increase in demand for hemp during the Civil War because the South, producing cotton, was cut off from the North. And so we were looking for other fibers, and hemp became the cotton substitute at the time. I should mention, too, that there was a link between cotton production and hemp production because cotton bales were bound with hemp twine. And so as long as cotton was being produced, they needed the hemp. So people in Kentucky are very much aware of this history of production. You find plaques like this. This happens to be in Frankfort, where I work, noting that hemp was first grown in 1775, that the peak production was in 1850. But you'll find similar plaques in many counties across the state, just talking about the history of hemp. This is very much in the popular consciousness. Now, hemp production began to decline in Kentucky after the Civil War. Part of this was because cotton was again available, and not only was cotton available, but people started using steel binders instead of hemp binders. And so steel cables replaced the ropes on ships also, and other natural fibers that were more rot-resistant than hemp, so jute and abaca and sisal, replaced hemp for marine uses. So really we saw a decline in hemp production in Kentucky shortly after the Civil War. Growers switched to tobacco, which was more profitable. And hemp production moved west, went to larger farms, particularly to Missouri, which became the biggest hemp producer in the nation by about 1860. There was a fair amount of work being done on hemp in the early 1900s. Lester Dewey, in particular, at the USDA, was breeding hemp, and he, writing in 1901, lists the qualities of what he considers an ideal hemp plant. He says it would be 10 to 12 feet in height. And so the image here is actually in France. You can see a person there for scale, and these hemp plants are about twice as tall as the person. 1/4 to 3/8 inch in diameter near the base. This is a very narrow stalk for such a tall plant. Stems predominantly fluted, large, comparatively hollow stems. So you look at the two stem cross sections at the top here, you'll see this very hollow stem, which is perhaps ideal for fiber production because the fibers are found in the outer ring around that stem. Which makes the plant more easy to break. And gives you a very tough fiber. You can imagine how strong these fibers have to be to support such a tall plant. He says the Chinese and Japanese varieties are more closely resemble this ideal, and he was using Chinese stock for his breeding programs. These breeding programs were very successful. They produced yields, much, much higher yielding plants in the 1920s and 1930s. By 1917, there was a hemp seed record set, the 1917 hemp seed record broke the 1859 record. So after this decline, we were back on the upswing again by 1917. maximum fiber yields obtained if the plants remain in a vegetative state. So you don't want these plants to go to seed if you're trying to produce fiber. That meant that the northern states were perhaps better suited to fiber production than the southern states, because you wouldn't have a seed produced in the shorter growing seasons. And there was some differentiation, regional differentiation here. So Kentucky and the southern states became the seed producers, while the northern states became the fiber producers. To give you an idea of these early fiber variety trials, this is data from 1929. We're looking at dry fiber yield in pounds per acre. And you can see these are various varieties. And this China Mington in particular was a high-yielding variety developed by the USDA, much, much higher than other varieties available at the time. 1930s. We began to see hemp production decline once again. There was federal support for cotton. By 1930, there were less than 1,500 acres of hemp in the country. Dewey's breeding program, this is the scientist at the USDA, it was terminated in 1933. A year after the program was terminated, some of that China Mington hemp, the variety that he had developed, demonstrated record yields in Kentucky, 1,750 pounds per acre of fiber on a 100-acre farm. So that was really, really very dramatic. But 1937, we have the Marijuana Tax Act come along. So this required all growers, importers, and processors of hemp to register and be licensed. As a result of growing public opposition to the cultivation of this drug plant, the continuation of hemp culture in the United States may depend on eliminating as much as possible of the active drug principle from the plant. Well, in fact, they didn't just try to eliminate high THC varieties of hemp. They tried to eliminate all varieties of hemp. In 1938, the federal government reported that they had destructed most of the hemp acreage. In fact, the acreage destroyed in 1938 was much greater than the reported acreage of production. And that improved germplasm developed by the USDA was lost. It was put into germplasm repositories, but was never grown out. And so when it was finally recovered, those seeds were no longer viable. We've lost China Mington and other early varieties. I'm glad that you saw this poster already. We're looking at similar sources, so I'll just move right back on. There was a brief revival in hemp production in World War II as part of the war effort. Some of you may have seen the Hemp for Victory video put out by the government at the time. By 1958, our last legal hemp was sold in the United States, and that was in Wisconsin. 1970, the Controlled Substances Act made hemp a controlled narcotic under federal law. And in 2013, the Kentucky Senate Bill 50 established a framework for legal hemp production. 2014, the Farm Bill allowed state agriculture departments, colleges, and universities to grow hemp for academic or research purposes. I want to just flash through a few headlines. This happens to be from the Huffington Post archive on Kentucky hemp. So this is an interesting bit of recent history. We actually elected a Republican Commissioner of Agriculture. His name is James Comer, who is a pro-hemp guy. He started talking to our senators, Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, both of whom who came out in favor of hemp production. And so there was this push for industrial hemp in Kentucky, which appeared to be opposed by our Democratic governor, Steve Beshear. For a while in February, it looked like none of the state bills were going to pass, but then there was and so we have the death sentence after early approval in March of 2013. Actually, last minute, we saw a bill passed. So the state passed its hemp bill, and you can see this middle headline now faces awkward legal limbo. The problem here, of course, was that hemp production was legal in Kentucky, but still illegal under federal law. So our Commissioner of Agriculture happened to be in the box at the Kentucky Derby with Boehner, and the two of them worked something out. So we had Senate support and House support at the federal level. Congress was on the verge of giving approval to legal hemp by January. And of course, this is all part of the Farm Bill. So by April, we have a Farm Bill that actually allows production of hemp research at colleges and universities and state departments of agriculture. So now it's legal, and we decided we were going to try to grow some of this stuff. The State Department of Agriculture brought in seed from Italy. And as that seed arrived in Kentucky, it was seized by the DEA. The state sued the DEA, and we had broad bipartisan support for that action. The House and Senate enacted bills to tell the DEA to leave the state alone, and by the end of May, we were actually able to obtain the seed, and the seed went in the ground in early June. This was too late. We really should have planted this seed in April or May. Now, for fiber production, it's okay, because the plant is going to grow. It will produce fiber no matter how big it gets. If our goal is seed production, we're not going to make it this year because we planted too late in the season due to politics. So what did we do? We set up a hemp variety trial. We had 12 varieties, hybrid seed, developed in Italy. All of this has a low THC content. The federal government defines industrial hemp as having THC content below 0.3% of dry weight. A psychoactive marijuana plant might have 10 to 20% THC by dry weight. So this is a very, very low level of THC. We planted June 10th of 2014, which was 2 months later than we'd intended. We had 1.3 inches of rainfall the day we planted, which we thought was a great thing. You know, it helped these seeds germinate. In fact, it would probably was a little more water than we wanted. The varieties we were growing, well, there's 6 numbered varieties. We're also growing Karma 334, Fiber Nova, Red Petiole, Alata Campania, ISCS 51, and CS. These are all hybrids from Italy. So this is what our trial looks like at the moment. Some early observations. First, we saw pretty poor emergence. It may be that we planted too deep. We were planting about a half inch. And it seemed that where we saw better emergence, it was where the soil happened to be in rivulets, and the seed was probably a little shallower than we had intended. Because of that dramatic rainfall the day we planted, we saw quite a bit of soil crusting. And perhaps in the top right-hand corner there, you can see that crusted soil, and you can see that the plants are only emerging in those cracks between the soil crust. Despite that poor emergence, we've seen rapid growth. Some of these plants are more than 6 feet tall now, and the seed has been in the ground for 6 weeks. There's tremendous variability. Now, if you look at that far right corner image is from June 23rd. This is July 7th, and this is July 25th. And by July 25th, some of those plants are above my head. We're seeing filled stalks at this point. I don't know if that will change as the plant grows more. Of course, we're looking for those hollow stalks for fiber plants, and these are varieties that were developed for fiber purposes. I'm seeing some spotted cucumber beetle damage, and you can see a spotted cucumber beetle there feeding on the hemp plant. So these are not immune to insect pests. We set up another trial looking at the potential of this crop to compete with weeds. Now, we have particular problems on our organic land with Johnson grass and with pigweed. From what I have read of early research, you know, nothing cleanses and prepares the earth better for other crops, especially for small grains and grasses, than hemp. It eradicates all weeds. When it's taken off, leaves the field not only clean, but smooth and even. Reminded me of a Christmas carol. So I'm eager to find something like this that I can include in my organic crop rotations. I need to find summer cover crops that can compete with weeds, particularly if soil will be bare for some time before putting in higher value crops. And we thought perhaps hemp would be the answer. We compared hemp to buckwheat and sorghum Sudan grass, which are summer cover crops that we currently use for this purpose on our organic land. And then we had a fourth treatment, and this was simply a mode control. So there's our 4 treatments with 4 replicates, all in a randomized complete block design. The variety we chose was Karma 334. We compared that to buckwheat, sorghum, Sudan grass, and monthly mowing. This is what the plots look like right now. So you can see hemp over on the far right-hand side, buckwheat, mowed plots, and sorghum Sudan grass. we see by far the most weed growth in those hemp plots. The buckwheat and sorghum Sudan grass plots are very clean. Hemp is doing a much poorer job of crowding out those weeds. This is just the image taken from another plot from the other side. And you can see some hemp plants struggling above the weeds in that far right-hand plot. But the buckwheat and the sorghum Sudan grass are really clean. So why are we doing this on organic land? Well, there are actually several universities in Kentucky doing research on hemp this year because we've just been told we're allowed to. So five universities, we're the only ones who are doing this research on organic land. All the other trials are on conventional land. Here at Kentucky State University, we're a relatively small, historically black land-grant university. We are really distinguished by our strong organic program, and so it seemed like an opportunity to look at organic production in particular. Now, hemp is a global commodity, and it's characterized by volatile prices, as with many global commodities. This is an agronomic crop. It's commonly grown on large acreages. Certainly in Canada, we've seen after initial legalization and lots of people trying this thing out, it's moved onto larger farms, particularly in Alberta. It's possible that the premium prices for organic hemp could allow profitable production on small farms, and I'm eager to provide that opportunity if it exists. Hemp could also be valuable in organic production or in organic rotations in terms of adding biodiversity or competing with weeds, although our initial trials suggest that may not be just as great as I'd hoped it might be. I want to sound a note of caution because I know that a lot of our growers in Kentucky are very excited about getting into hemp production. And I'm a Canadian. I'm actually moving back to Canada in a few weeks, and so if you I happen to know any PhDs who are interested in doing organic hemp work or other organic work at Kentucky State University, keep an eye on the job announcements there. So in Canada, the hemp seed prices are at about 78 to 80 cents per pound for conventional hemp, maybe $1.10 to $1.20 per pound for organic hemp. Now, you compare that to the $10, $20, $30, $90 that was for some of the herbal medicinals in the first talk, and you can see this is a very low-value crop. The yields are around 1,000 pounds to the acre for seed production, and I should say in Canada most of the production has been seed production. So you might be able to make $750 per acre on conventional hemp, maybe $1,000 per acre on organic. Up to a third of the Canadian production is organic. We've seen mostly seed production in Canada, not fiber production, and that's largely because there just hasn't been a fiber processing industry. So if the fiber production is going to work, we need processors. You'll see just tremendous volatility in the production of hemp in Canada since legalization, and each of these spikes coincides with a promise of a processing plant, and each of the dips coincides with a failure to realize those processing plants. So we may be better suited to seed than fiber. We're having problems initially with poor emergence. I think next year we'll go in and plant more shallowly. It hasn't been a strong weed competitor compared to the cover crops that we're using already. We need fiber processors. There are competitive global markets, so despite our history as a hemp producer, we may lack a competitive advantage competing globally. There's been a lot of excitement due to the political wrangling, but I urge caution. These are some hemp carpets, just to give you an example of one way in which that hemp fiber might be used. And I'm going to finish up here by acknowledging the crew who have worked on this project, John Cambron, Tony Silvernail, Trevor Claiborne, Cynthia Rice. I want to thank the Kentucky Department of Agriculture for providing our seed, Max Stone, Mike Lewis, our dean, Teferi Sagai. And I thought it was funny as I was flashing this slide up with the hemp products. I noticed that, you know, if you're going to outlaw, if you're going to legalize hemp, well, there's got to be something that's still not allowed, right? Thank you very much for your time.
Couple questions.
I've done quite a bit of work with tropical cover crops, in particular Crotalaria gentia, which is very similar in growth patterns and morphology to hemp. What was your seeding rate and your spacing?
We were going on.
Huge variation.
Sure, sure. We had an 8-inch spacing, and we were seeding with a Jang seeder, which is kind of a precision push seeder. So the rates were relatively low, and still, I think if we had decent emergence, we would have had a dense planting. But as you could see from those slides, the emergence was poor enough that we have a much sparser planting than I had hoped. I don't, off the top of my head, know the pounds per acre as far as the seeding rate.
We were initially told, start off like 15 pounds per acre with Crotalaria. Now the cover crop, to get the proper weed suppression, we're up to about 45 to 50.
Is that right? Yeah.
It's absolutely, magnificent at that point. So very little shifts in some of the management makes, absolutely huge difference. So it'd be interesting to see what that is.
I imagine you're right. And you can imagine, I suspect we're making all sorts of rookie mistakes during our first try here.
Yes. I come from Wisconsin, and we, as you mentioned, we had grown a lot of hemp. We have feral hemp that is in wooded areas, and you can find it. And I wondered if that might be a source for Kentucky hemp varieties and germplasm. You go into the feral hemp if you have that.
We also have feral hemp, ditchweed, I think we're calling it. And there might be some of the same genetics there. Certainly we're not seeing the same. Certainly that feral hemp has very low THC, as does the industrial hemp. But the characteristics are not nearly as good as those varieties that were bred by the USDA in the 1930s, in 1920s, or with the hybrids that are available internationally now.
Thank you, Dr. Bonson.
Thank you.